Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm Kyle Boleyn, and of course, I'm joined by Courtney Harding. Today on the show, we're going to be discussing the launch of Apple Music and what it means for the music business. So Apple released the brand new Apple Music service today. Courtney, what were your initial thoughts on the streaming music service?
I really liked it. I mean, I am a hard person to please. I'm very snarky and very picky. And I never say never, but I think when it comes out, I might switch. I thought it was, I think there's a lot to talk about, a lot to dig into, and some stuff to criticize, some stuff they need to iterate on. But overall, I'm happily surprised. I think they did a pretty darn good job. So yeah, how about you?
I was left with a very similar impression. I sat along and watched the keynote like a lot of people as they showed off all the different features in the new Apple Music service. I kind of thought to myself, wow, I've really got to give this a try. I'm really thinking of switching from Spotify to Apple Music, especially for that 3-month trial. And who knows, after that, I might keep on subscribing.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing a 3-month trial is pretty brilliant on their part. It's easier to sign up for a free trial that's a month, and then in a month remember, like, oh, I have to cancel this. 3 months is a long time, and I feel like a lot of people are going to join and like it and get hooked, and B, a lot of people are going to sign up and just forget after 3 months, or they're going to be so used to using it that it's going to be hard for them to leave.
I joked with a good friend of mine that they should go buy the website, How to Cancel Your Apple Music Subscription, put some detailed instructions on there, and put several banner placements promoting their record label and the bands on that roster. I bet they would get millions of hits within kind of the 3-month period after the 3-month free period ends.
I think it would take a little bit longer than that. But you're right. I mean, like a lot of again, I've done this many times. You know, I sign up for something, I think I'm going to try it out, I forget. And then after a couple months, I get my credit card bill or my bank statement, and I'm just sort of digging through to make sure everything's copacetic. And I'm like, oh yeah, I got to cancel that. Yeah, I mean, it'll take a while. I also think, again, I've been really snarky about it, but I think people are going to like it. I think it's a pretty good product.
It does look very similar to the other music streaming players on the market. But at the same time, it has that very simple Apple design where the images are very pretty and the player and everything is very simple and intuitive. So it'll be interesting to see how that approach resonates with this kind of broader mainstream market. Historically, streaming music services have appealed to these tech-savvy early adopters who really want to manage their vast collections of albums and songs. Apple is kind of taking the approach of, we want to make this for everyone. We want to be as easy to use as possible and as delightful to use as possible, quite frankly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just sort of, so it seems like there were sort of three big pieces of it in the announcement today. And the first is the streaming service. And that to me was like the least interesting part, not because the product was bad, but because the product was so similar in many respects to what's out there on the market already. So, you know, visually it looks similar to other products, right? It's really blocky and, you know, you can a lot of squares. Content wise, I don't think it's going to be appreciably different, right? I mean, when you have catalogs of 25 million songs or 20 million songs, right? Like they're pretty complete. I mean, an eagle-eyed reporter pointed out that AC/DC was on one of the playlists shown at the keynote today. And if that was not something, if that was actually real and not just something they like put in as a placeholder, that's potentially really interesting. I don't know how many people that's going to like convert to subscribe, but that's kind of cool. We didn't hear anything about the Beatles, which I thought was kind of an interesting, thing to leave out. So I'm assuming that no news means that the Beatles won't be on the streaming service. The mood and activity playlist, I think, to me, looked anyway very similar to what's on other products. But again, there's a lot of people that haven't ever seen those before. So for me, who's used pretty much all of the streaming players on the market, at least that are available in the US, for some period of time, that none of that struck me as particularly innovative, but I could see someone who's like never used that before being like, oh, wow, there's music for my like commute home.
I think what you're saying there is a very important point. Songs, Beats Music, and all these other music streaming services, sure, they were used by millions of people, but not hundreds of millions of people. So this idea that music can be the soundtrack to your life and you can have this playlist for a specific activity or a certain mood is going to reach a much broader market than it probably had in the past. Certainly, you see people like Spotify incorporating playlists at the center of their experience and recommending them based on a specific time of day and whatever music that you typically listen to at that time. But I think for a lot of people, seeing the hip hop workout playlist or the dinner chill music is going to be a pleasant surprise, and they're going to get to experience that for the first time. And I think they're going to like it quite a bit.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, the one thing too that I prefer about, you know, the sort of Spotify playlist experience is you can really just skip around the playlist. You know, I've used Pandora, obviously, I've used 8-Tracks and Songza, and I like some of those for various things, but you have much less control than you do. And you really can't. My experience with songs is that I've been able to go as deep with certain artists. Like if I hear a song that I like, I kind of just have to remember it. Versus if I'm in Spotify, I can just click on that artist and find other stuff.
And that's going to be a powerful part of this app, is you're going to be able to discover artists within those playlists and drill down much more easily, make sure you favorite them, make them part of your collection. So then Apple knows to recommend you that music in the future. I saw in the app demo that there's a For You section in the app wherein they intend to recommend that type of content, stuff that is new that's recently released that week, probably stuff that is new to you based on favorite artists in that app, and other kind of editorial picks that the staff at Apple Music is making.
Yeah, I mean, the lack of personalization in some of the other services has really annoyed me. I use Spotify primarily, and every time I go to the main page, it's just like, here's what's new this week, with no consideration for here's what's new this week that you might like. So if Apple can pull off the sort of like really learning your tastes and catering to those, that's interesting. You know, there's always the chance that you might lose some discovery. So I've found stuff that I didn't think I would like and that wouldn't have gotten recommended to me normally, but I think in general, once something can sort of learn your tastes, that's really powerful.
Why doesn't music have the equivalent of the tomato meter, where the critics really like it and the audience loved it, right? Like, I want to be able to go inside the shelves of the Apple Music service and see, whoa, 99% of people love this album. Maybe I'm going to check it out. But currently, if you go inside the other services, every album looks the same with the exception of the art. And while someone certainly picked those specific albums to show you over the 100 others, I have no way of knowing how good a given album is. And I think if it was critically received in some way, I might give it a longer chance.
Well, I think the other part of that is too, like, that's so much of our experience with other things. So, I mean, I shop on Amazon all the time, and I mean, I just look at the reviews as a matter of course, and that's such a big part of your Amazon shopping experience. And I mean, believe me, I've read reviews written by people that have like 2 brain cells. So, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, but, you know, you look at that, you look at Yelp, you look at, these TV rating sites and these film rating sites. And it's interesting that with music, you have to do so much legwork. Yeah. And I could even see some sort of like up and down vote or something that would say, you know, people tend to like this, people tend not to like this, just to sort of help people decide what they want to listen to. That's a feature I haven't really seen anywhere, which is pretty interesting.
For a period of time, Spotify had an app section that allowed you to install the Pitchfork Music app. Then you could more easily read the review of a given album and stream the music at the same time. I don't believe that's necessarily the best way to go about things, nor is it the most mainstream experience that I can imagine. But yeah, some kind of rating system that really showcases both critically acclaimed and listener loved music, I think would be extremely helpful for, as Jimmy Iovine says, figuring out what to play next.
Yeah, I mean, the Pitchfork app was interesting. I mean, again, it's for a very niche segment, and it's also, you know, what the Pitchfork reviewer thought of it, which, again, that's one person's opinion, even though that person is theoretically qualified to give that opinion. I mean, as much as it pains me to say so, I'd kind of like to see something like what Amazon has, where maybe you don't need the sort of horrible text, but, you know, people could sort of even, you know, favorite or like or thumbs up or thumbs down, and just sort of see like where a song ranks. You know, that's something that people can game, and I think game very easily. But again, it's just kind of interesting. It's an interesting piece of data feedback. I mean, if you love an artist, you're going to listen to their stuff no matter what. But yeah, if you're trying to decide which of the next 10 songs do I want to listen to, that's a way to set them apart, especially if it's stuff that you're not familiar with.
And popularity is only one metric that you can look at.
Yeah, exactly.
There's another interesting shift happening, though, which is you see Spotify recommending the best playlist for a specific time of day, and you see Apple really zeroing in on offering albums and songs. It'll be interesting to see like which approach wins out. I think with Spotify, for example, what they're trying to combat is an increasing amount of mainstream users are picking up their app. And if it can't give them something to listen to very quickly, they might just leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah. And what's funny about Spotify, too, is like, you know, they seem to have really embraced the Spotify curated playlist, but they've moved away from individual playlists. Like, it's very hard to look for individual, like just to search for individual playlists. Most of the playlists that I follow are, you know, now very either very infrequently updated, or people have just stopped updating them. And, you know, I'm fully aware that I'm very unique and that this was the thing that really kept me on Spotify. But, you know, I worked as a music writer. I have a lot of friends that are music journalists. They created for a few years really amazing playlists, and that's what really kept me on Spotify. And all but two have given up, and the one hasn't updated her playlist in over a month, and the other guy puts like three new tracks a week. So, you know, it's gone from feeling like very important and cool to just feeling like, okay, fine. Like, if they put something new up, I'll listen to it. But, you know, that was how I discovered a lot of music. So, you know, one thing that we're not clear about is what sort of social playlisting functionality Apple Music will have. Like, there's no real way to share playlists in iTunes. It's not incredibly complicated and weird and convoluted to figure out. But, you know, is there going to be that element of social music in Apple Music?
We don't have that information yet. And it's interesting that your friends, these music curators, stop feeling the need to update their playlists. Maybe that's because all they knew were that people were following the list, but they couldn't really see how often people were engaging with it. So maybe they gave it up for that reason.
Yeah. I mean, I actually haven't asked any of them why, but, you know, I mean, look, people get busy, things happen. But yeah, I mean, I feel like Spotify killing the Apple Store was a really terrible idea on their part. And I'm super, super biased when I say that, because I, full disclosure, worked for a company that for many months that was a Spotify app. But I feel like that added to the richness of the experience, where you could go in the Pitchfork app and see what, you know, Pitchfork liked. You could go in all these other different apps and go down these rabbit holes into different niches and just have all these different experiences. And now it just feels like, okay, here's a bunch of playlists to listen to while you're drinking coffee. Here's a bunch of albums. That's kind of like you're really not given the guidance that you once were, you know, like, to come back to something they did in the sort of intro video for Apple Music, they basically said the same thing that many other services said, which is, you know, global platform with millions of tracks and da 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 da. And it's like, yeah, people don't want that. People don't want 20 million tracks. They want the one track right now that they want. And I think a lot of people go into these services and they get kind of lost. Like, they just start looking stuff up. And even that seems overwhelming if they don't know exactly what they want to listen to. And so then they're just kind of like, oh, whatever, I give up. This is too complicated. You know, and Spotify really took away a lot of the training wheels. So with Apple, I'm curious to see like what type of guidance they give people.
So that's true, but the Apple Music service does provide listeners with many ways to discover music they already love and new songs they might enjoy. You have the new For You section that recommends you songs based on those that you're listening to, as well as the new ones that came out that week. Then you have this brand new Apple Radio service that has these live stream stations programmed by professional DJs. A 24-hour station live in 100 countries where everyone can listen to the same thing at the exact same time and discover music as a group rather than just as an isolated individual.
Yeah, and that's cool. I mean, that we haven't seen in a while. You know, it was the 25th or 30th. It must have been the 30th anniversary of Motown 25 a couple months ago. And I remember, you know, everyone was tweeting about that and sharing the Michael Jackson moonwalk video. And you know, that was something that was watched by, I believe, 1 in 5 American households watched that, which is, you know, sort of cultural penetration we never see today. So, yeah, the thought of, like, so many people around the world listening to one thing at the same time, that's pretty compelling to me. Like, that's pretty interesting.
It'll be interesting to see whether or not the stations light up on social media, especially when a brand new, previously unreleased song gets debuted on one of these stations.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like they have a really good team. I'm sure they've got a crackerjack social media squad. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, the battle of like human curation versus machine curation has been raging for a really long time, and there were definitely some digs at Pandora, you know, in the announcement today, and yeah, I mean, you even see it on terrestrial radio with the rise of this sort of jukebox radio station format where there's not really a DJ. It's very clear that, like, this is being programmed out of a corporate home office and a robot reads off the names of the tracks, and that's about it. You know, I feel like in the U.S., most big commercial radio stations, people have kind of accepted at this point that the DJs aren't actually the ones programming most of it. So it'll be curious to see if people get really excited about, like, oh, this is the Zane Lowe radio hour, or this is the such and such radio hour.
What's going to be really interesting about these live streamed radio stations is when Zane Lowe gets a famous celebrity like Drake or a Katy Perry on, he starts interviewing them. Apple is going to be able to send a push notification to all of these Apple Music users who are very interested in these specific artists. And then all the listeners are going to be able to share in real time on Twitter and on Facebook all the things that their favorite artists are saying. I think this is what's going to be really interesting, the global interview of a massive celebrity when millions of people are tuning in and sharing about it in real time.
I think that's going to be interesting. And I also think if it's a global platform, I'm sort of fascinated to see who's going to pull down the biggest numbers on that. Because, you know, if you look at, you know, in previous, like, I don't know, polls or previous social media metrics, people who get huge numbers are sometimes completely unknown in the West. They're like K-pop stars or, you know, Latin artists. And so I'm actually fascinated by that. If this is going to be as global as they say it is, and it is going to be in, I think, 100 countries, you know, then I'm pretty excited about, like, you know, can we be breaking stars in different countries? Can we be pulling in, you know, different people on different radio stations? I mean, it seems like the radio station is fairly global, but it's still, I mean, it's, you know, LA, New York, London, like, I don't know, broadcast in Tokyo? Maybe they will.
If these stations become popular and millions of people are tuning in all over the world, they will be able to break a song and get people excited about it. It just so happens that they also happen to be the people that sell those songs. Certainly, they're going to be pushing the streaming music experience and wanting you to go down that rabbit hole. But it's not like iTunes went away. They're still going to be able to sell those songs. They could break the song on radio, make it exclusive to iTunes for a period of time, get people buying the song, and then a few months later, they could put it on the Apple Music service.
I don't know know that that would be the best user experience. Like, I feel like people dislike exclusivity enough where, you know, I mean, that's the problem with exclusivity, right? Anything is going to want everything that you make, quote unquote, exclusive winds up everywhere else within 10 minutes. So they can premiere the song and that's great. They can sell it on iTunes and that's great, but it's going to be on YouTube really quickly. And it's going to be, it's not going to be on other streaming services, but it's going to be on SoundCloud, on YouTube, on torrents within 15 minutes. So, you know, and then users are going to get angry because they're like, well, why can't I pay for this? Why can't I stream this? Oh, here it is free on whatever. I'm just going to go use that.
That's true, but don't pretend that record labels aren't going to try to do this.
Oh, they'll try. You know, they can try.
Whether or not they succeed is the question.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, listen, I'm sure we're not the first people to think of that. I'm sure that's being pitched all over the place. I just, again, like, you know, nobody learns the lesson about exclusivity. I don't know why. To me, it's so obvious. But, you know, there you have it. Like, they're welcome to try.
With music exclusives, you can certainly try to get the most popular artists available on your service before they're available on other services. Apple does stand in this really dominant position where what it's going to be able to do is broker deals with these artists that say exclusive on iTunes for so many months, exclusive on iTunes Music for so many months, promoted on Zane Lowe's radio station 3 weeks before release. Like, there's a lot of tiers that they can jump into that other streaming services don't traditionally allow, right? The famous kerfuffle between Taylor Swift and Spotify was predicated on the idea that they wouldn't allow her to only stream her music on the paid tier. I think Apple is more likely to play ball in that respect.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I think that Apple, you know, Apple's going to try to lock up the market for sure. Like, that's not even a question. You know, the sort of danger comes if Apple completely locks up the market, then, you know, that's not a place you want to be either. You don't ever want to be in a place where there's a monopoly.
Right. Apple locks up the market, owns the music business. This sounds familiar.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've, you know, then someone just comes in, does some disruptive stuff. And yeah, I mean, like, I don't want other services to go out of business. Like, even if I wind up switching services, even if I have criticism of other services, like, competition in a marketplace is always good. So, you know, I rag on Tidal, and I don't think Tidal is that good, but like, Tidal should continue to exist, right? Like, the last thing we want is for Apple to just crush everyone or buy everyone, even worse. Like, there have to be a few players in the game just to keep things fair, because if there's no one else, then Apple can just arbitrarily set all the rules.
Right, but by a few players in the market, we're probably talking about 3 to 4, not 10 or more.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the little ones are going to go away. I mean, you know, and I won't name names because I'm just not going to be a jerk, but everyone listening to this podcast can name a few of these players off the top of their heads that, like, probably won't exist in a few years, or they'll get bought. You know, they have small subscriber bases, they have some sort of product. Like, they'll just get picked up by someone else, and that's okay. But, you know, the fear is, like, Spotify gets bought.
We also have to ask the obligatory question, is this a Pandora killer? Will this be the one that kills Pandora?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like people I've talked to who use Pandora like the thing with Pandora I feel like a lot of people like is that it's free. So I've talked to a bunch of people that use Pandora frequently. None of them have ever said to me, oh my God, Pandora is the greatest thing ever. They've mostly been actually fairly critical of Pandora, but it's free and it's better than terrestrial radio. So, you know, there's just a whole audience that's never going to pay for this, right? Like, I think Apple has a much better chance than anyone else by leaps and bounds of making this mainstream. But there's still that huge audience that's like, oh, I'll just listen to the radio, right? I mean, there was a huge audience back in the day that just listened to the radio and never bought music. They never bought CDs. They never bought cassettes. Like, it just didn't matter as much. So Pandora is kind of, I think, going to be the product for them. Like, if you kind of don't care, you just want something to listen to, you kind of want to control it a little bit, Pandora's great.
Do you think that traditional broadcast radio should be worried that Apple is setting up 24/7 global radio stations in 100 countries?
No.
Not at all? Not the littlest bit? Bob Pittman shouldn't be shaking in his shoes?
No, because, yeah, this is something I wrote about last week. Like, terrestrial radio offers a lot of stuff that Apple doesn't, which is they offer the news, they offer the weather, they offer the funny DJs who talk about local issues, right? Like, there's sort of a famous story where a small town in, I think it was in one of the Dakotas, actually, you probably know the story. A small town in one of the Dakotas, all of their radio stations had been bought up by conglomerates. And so there was no one in the town working at any of these radio stations. It was all broadcasting from other cities. So there was like a really horrific train accident and a bunch of nuclear waste got spilled somehow. And no one could figure out how to use the radio to alert people that, like, there's nuclear waste spilled in your town. You should probably, like, close your windows. You know, and that's always held up as the, like, oh, consolidation is terrible, blah, blah, blah. You know, people want that local voice. They want a DJ on the radio who's not only going to be like, oh, Zane Lowe. They want a DJ who's like, hey, you know, I'm going to be DJing at this club this weekend. I'm going to tell you about the snowboard report, you know, for the mountains this weekend. Like, people, I think, still want that local experience. And I've talked to a lot of people that, you know, really still listen to terrestrial radio a lot. And they're like, yeah, I could use all these other apps to, you know, figure out the traffic and the weather. But, you know, they're busy people. They're maybe not as tech savvy as you and I are. It's easier for them. They're just trained to, like, get in the car, put on the, you know, put on the radio and get all their information that way. So, yeah, I don't think terrestrial radio should be worried.
Probably not. I mean, it's always interesting when you take away the tyranny of geography so that anyone can listen to any radio station at any given time, regardless of how far they are away from the tower. At a certain point, you don't need 100, 1,000, however many stations there are, playing the same classical rock with the same two old guys reminiscing about kind of being bros. Like, I'm sorry, but like the Jack FMs of the world maybe don't need to be in every single town playing the same Led Zeppelin songs and talking to their dude truck driver friends about how good the riffs are.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But I think the other thing is, you know, there is a way now to listen to radio from any, not anywhere in the world, but from most places in the world anytime you want. Like, I listen to the KCRW app constantly. I stream that stuff every day. You know, it's easy. It's great. Like, I listen to Morning Becomes Eclectic every day, and I love it. It's the way I find out about most music. You know, again, I'm not part of a huge population that does that. Like, you can listen to the KXP app. You can stream radio from around the world pretty easily at this point. You just kind of have to know how to do it.
The question becomes, when there's Apple CarPlay and you have your iPhone and you now have these 24/7 radio stations, are you going to stream the Apple radio stations because they're built in and they're really easy and they work really great? Or are you going to try to stream your traditional local radio? Or are you going to tune into KCRW? At a certain point in the connected car, people are going to have more options than they have before. And this could greatly change their listening habits. We know that SiriusXM has taken this strategy of making their stations available wherever you are. Maybe Apple wants to compete with them too.
Yeah, I think Sirius is... SiriusXM should be much more worried. Because again, they have a, right, like, you have to like music, I guess, music or their talk programs, I guess, but you have to like have some sort of a passion to be able to pay, to be willing to pay for SiriusXM, right? Like, you know, one thing that Apple didn't offer today, which I was kind of hoping they would, you know, no one is doing podcasting correctly, right? Like, the podcast app in Apple is awful, and I use it and I hate it. But if there was a way to fold podcasts and podcast subscriptions and different, like, talk radio, news radio, anything like that to fold it in, that would make it, for me anyway, like, a much stronger competitor to traditional radio formats. Because don't forget, you can flip around on the radio and just be like, oh, now I'm listening to music, now I'm going to listen to talk radio. now I'm going to go to NPR, now I'm going to go to this. Like, no one has created an experience that's that seamless, I guess.
So, Courtney, I have excellent news for you. Last year, Apple acquired Swell, one of the best podcast apps that has ever came out. What made Swell stand out above the competition is that you would just turn the app on, it would start playing a podcast that it thinks you would like, and based on the time spent listening to that specific podcast, it would then recommend similar content. They called it Pandora for podcasting. And I love, love, love that app. And then Apple acquired that app, and they've since shut it down. I have to imagine that with the renewed interest in podcasting and Apple's recent acquisition, that the next master stroke is going to be making their own NPR One-style competitor installed directly on your iPhone. The podcast app, as it stands now, it's too niche. It's not well organized. You have to go find a show. You've got to subscribe to it. If you don't play your most recent shows, then it stops updating. And then you go back and you're like, oh, I guess it stopped updating. Let me click the thing to make it start updating again. And it eats up just a shit ton of data as well as storage space. So you have to imagine that Apple's thinking about improving the podcast and saying, like, look, everyone use our podcast app. We put podcasts on the map. Here are your brand new ways to have these great recommendation-driven podcast stations that are attuned to the shows that you like and love.
Yeah. I mean, that would be fantastic. And I hope, you know, hopefully they'll, you know, obviously this is version one of Apple Music. They're going to hopefully continue to iterate on this a lot. And that would be great if they could, you know, as they build out more of sort of the radio functionality, do something like that. Because I think that gets them a little closer to being a radio killer.
You have to wonder, there was this app that came out a few years ago called Umano. And what they did is they paid a bunch of voiceover actors to read news articles. How difficult would it be for Apple to bring together an army of freelancers all around the country to read the short bits of news from local providers and stitch that into your radio experience?
See, I think that would be really fascinating. Or even just do deals with like the local news providers. So, you know, they don't even have to get freelancers. They can just get a deal with, you know, NBC New York or CBS New York or, you know, pick your station and just have one of the hosts there, you know, or just pull their content. Like, they're right now in New York, and I imagine it's like this in most markets, most of the news stations are also partnered with, like, most of the TV stations are partnered with news stations. So like 1010 Winds has a news partner that's also a major TV station, or like CBS Radio. I mean, that's kind of an obvious one. So if they were to just do those partnership deals, like, that would be pretty easy for them. And ditto for weather, ditto for traffic. I mean, traffic, they can, you know, their Apple Maps is supposed to be so much better now. They can learn your, you know, again, they learn your patterns. They learn your habits. They can give you, like, if you get in your car at 7 a.m. Monday through Friday, like, chances are you're going the same place every day. So they can learn your habits and then serve you the traffic based on those habits.
Well, you know what happens next, right? Like, I mean, think of your favorite radio shows. Think of your favorite producers. How much money would it take for Apple to acquire This American Life, Radiolab, Planet Money, Death, Sex, and Money?
I don't want that to happen. I you know what? That to me is a bridge too far. Like,
I mean, NPR is the only thing they can't buy. But they can, for, like, think if they set aside $3 million to buy any number of the best radio producers in the country to make original, long-form storytelling content. I mean, they could fucking blink and acquire Gimlet Media and have Alex Bloomberg leading a team of 1,000 podcasters.
Yeah, they could. And, you know, it's funny because I am willing to put up with a lot of corporate ownership, and I'm totally fine with most of it. I would be very concerned if they bought up NPR. Like, that to me, I think, is you need some publicly owned media in the world. One of the other things that's interesting, and this is outside of the scope of music, but they basically announced like a Flipboard killer, where, you know, I forget, what is it called again?
I think it's just called Apple News.
Apple News. Okay. So yeah. So Apple News, like, you know, the deals they've gotten on that are insane, right? It's like 30 New York Times stories for free every day or some crazy amount of content. And they've got a ton of publishers in there. I mean, it looks really slick, but I'm like, how in the world are they going to monetize this? I didn't see any place for ads. Now, this was in their demo, so, you know, I could actually start using it, and there's like blinking ads everywhere. But, you know, that's going to be really interesting. And if they have more like, you know, public sources, public interest sources, NPR type stuff, like, A, that's cool because that's what I like to consume. But B, I'm like, there's got to be some, like, there has to be some way to monetize this content. And if you're just putting it in this aggregator and taking away a lot of the monetization, then that's a little concerning.
It'll be curious to see what they do about that, right? It's unclear at this time whether or not there will be ads. It's unclear at this time whether or not there's going to be in-app subscriptions for the New York Times if you decide to do that, and then it shows up in your newsstand app instead. It's also unclear for these other publishers that are primarily ad-supported, like, I don't know, The Atlantic or Slate, what kind of deal Apple cut with them and how much content is just inside of Apple without sending them to the Slate website where they can potentially take ownership of that relationship and get someone's email address and keep them in the loop about the latest Slate happenings and podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's between that and the Facebook thing, the Facebook News thing, like that's, it's going to be really interesting to see where that all shakes out for different publishers, because they're spreading their content more, which is, I guess, good, but they're losing a lot of the opportunity to make money off that content, which is, you know, again, as much as I hate ads as a user, I also like recognize that's how they make money.
I just thought of the funny comparison that like Jeff Bezos owns a news publisher and Apple owns all publishers because they're now beholden to Apple, right? All of their content is in their app.
Yeah. So let's talk about this Music Connect thing, because that's, again, pulling in other content to an Apple app. So, you know, the reaction to Connect I've seen has been kind of mixed. Some people are like, oh, it's the new MySpace, ha-ha. And other people, I think, have really liked it and realized that there's an interesting opportunity for artists to share stuff with their fans. So, you know, for me, it's interesting to think about, like, what would an all music consumption stream look like? Because, you know, I tend to consume a lot on Twitter. That's primarily how I consume most stuff. And, you know, my Twitter feed is a huge mix of things. So I'm going back and forth from, like, looking at a tweet about, you know, this horrifying thing where a cop beat up a teenage girl in Texas, to, oh, this band I like is playing next week, to, oh, there's my friend's cat. And it's this constant sort of mental jumping around from like, oh, this is horrible, to, oh, awesome. And it looks like in Connect, you just get a stream that's pretty much all, like, oh, this musician is doing something. Oh, this musician is doing something. So, you know, I'm curious to see what you think, how many people are going to want to consume just a feed of music-related content.
Well, in your case, it sounds like the difference of putting a laser pointer in front of a cat versus actually having a focused experience. I think, sure, music is a part of our everyday feeds on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And there are many statistics that say that music is the number one thing that people follow within these networks. But let's be real. Facebook is hiding things in their algorithms. The stream of Twitter, we don't always see everything that gets posted. And on Instagram, that's mostly photos. It's not necessarily focused on the music per se. So if there is this central music feed tied to your favorite artists and their management companies and record labels make an effort to keep that full of rich, interesting content that isn't too promotional, but still has this high consumption value, I think it could be pretty interesting. I think we forget that while Rihanna might have tens of millions of likes on Facebook, not all of her fans are seeing that content. And many more Rihanna fans just don't even know that that content exists. So if in this Connect feed, Rihanna fans are going to see her content and get to experience it with other Rihanna fans and like and favorite it, that could be hugely compelling, especially if Rihanna starts going kind of off the script a little bit and starts doing little 3-minute duets or starts posting song lyrics or takes fans inside the studio. Of course, these are things that artists have been able to do for a number of years, but they've never been directly integrated into a music service in this way. And if they were, they certainly weren't from the most major artists on the planet.
Here's the thing, right? Like, it sounds cool, and then I get skeptical. And then I'm like, well, you know, of course most artists aren't going to put stuff up there without their label approving it, and it's all going to be very thought out. And, you know, as fun as it would be to see, like, crazy off-the-cuff stuff from different people, even the stuff that's perceived as crazy and off-the-cuff from, like, Kanye West. I mean, Kanye West has a whole team of people before he puts out anything that are, like, approving it, thinking of it, strategizing it. So, you know, my fear is that it's just going to be the sort of very sanitized feed that you can kind of get anywhere else. And then it's like, okay, how many, I mean, handwritten lyrics are interesting maybe the first couple times. And then it's like, oh, great, another piece of paper with some dudes writing on it. Like, they showed an example of a Bastille walking around the studio. And I was like, okay, how many times can you watch a bunch of dudes sit in a studio? I mean, that Foo Fighters documentary did well, so maybe I'm not the target audience, but...
So here's my question, right? Which is that we're older people that understand that artists aren't necessarily gods anymore, right? Like, we have a sort of concept that, like, Linkin Park, it has people in it. But when I was 14, there weren't people in Linkin Park. They were like apostles or something. Like, they were people that I could not touch, could not meet, could not talk to, but made this music that was so emotionally resonant with me and connected to a specific time in my life. So I think maybe we don't see the value of this behind the scenes content, but many more younger fans are going to like and love this content and really enjoy that they're getting this behind the scene look at their favorite artists.
Oh yeah. So no, if like One Direction does one of these things, I mean, forget it. Like, it's going to be huge. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. I think one of the other things that I'm a little concerned about is they really sold the idea of, you know, oh, unsigned artists can be part of this too. And good, like, that's great. But unsigned artists can be part of a lot of things. They just have to sign up with a service like a, you know, TuneCore or any of those other aggregators. And none of those are CD Baby. I mean, none of those are particularly hard to sign up for. They're not expensive. They get your stuff on all the services already. So the sort of perception that they were like, oh, we're the first to do this, it's like, no, you're really not. I understand they're trying to compete with SoundCloud or trying to, you know, muscle into SoundCloud's territory, which is, you know, that's okay. But, you know, I think what tends to happen is people who are basement artists put their stuff up on Spotify or RDO, and then 10 people listen to it. So my fear is that, you know, yeah, they're open to all these unsigned artists, and it's great, and part of Connect and everyone's. But the fact is, like, Rihanna is always going to get the prime position in Connect, and some kid in a basement wherever just isn't going to have that juice. So that's kind of,
but let's not pretend that Apple's not going to play Kingmaker though, right? Like,
oh, they tried to do that today with that unsigned guy.
Right. Well, and they're going to do it more. So, right. That if a particular artist is able to gain a certain momentum, either in iTunes track sales or iTunes music streams, they can feature that predominantly in the For You section. They can bring them on Zane Lowe's radio station and blow them up, as well as, you know, put them on the homepage of iTunes, right? Like, there are many ways that Apple can take someone from nothing and make it big. I'm pretty sure that iTunes played a huge role in Drake's success as well.
Oh, yeah. No, and like, Spotify has done this as well. Spotify has, you know, take an unsigned artist or, you know, indie artist, up-and-coming artist, whatever, and really, you know, sort of pimp them and, you know, gotten some fairly, I mean, I feel like Ed Sheeran was sort of a lesser-known artist, and Spotify sort of made his career. So yeah, I mean, it's not like it's never been done before, but I feel like the fact that they were just making such a big deal of it as a differentiating factor, to me, I was like, okay, this is hopefully cool. We'll see. Yeah, I mean, just to sort of wrap everything up, because we've been going for a while, you know, I think, I like the product, and I'll definitely try it out, and I'll probably stick with it. I think it has a good chance of really breaking into the mainstream. Like, never say never, and you can never be 100% certain, but I think it has a solid chance of doing what the other services couldn't do. Do I think it's perfect? No. Did it get everything on my wish list? No. But I gotta say, you know, I was very, very skeptical when Apple bought Beats. I made fun of it. I've kind of been snarking about it for a while, and you know, I'll eat my hat. Like, I think they put out a pretty good product.
That's my takeaway too. I'm really impressed with what they did. I'm very excited to try out these features. And I think that a lot of people are going to test this out. Apple really does have the potential to bring on-demand subscription music to the mainstream market. They're going to have a huge influence on the adoption of mood and activity-based playlists. And who knows, this live radio concept could also change popular culture and how we think about having a shared music experience among our fellow music listeners. Because if Apple can actually get themselves into the water cooler, oh man, were you listening to the Beyoncé interview last night? Then what they've achieved is something that is so, so hard to do in regular media, right? Like, so few people say, like, did you see so-and-so get interviewed on Letterman last night? It's just not the same. And there's no easy way to consume an artist interview or a exclusive track performance, let alone an in-studio performance. We didn't even talk about that. Apple could have a studio somewhere and start pulling off in-studio mixes, just like Spotify has been doing, as well as some other niche sites like Daytrotter. So it'll be cool to see if they go in that direction, and I'm sure they'll keep iterating until they nail that approach.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, Courtney, great special, special extra Apple episode.
That's a very special episode.
And I'm sure we'll come back and update everyone on our thoughts once Apple Music comes out.
Absolutely.
Well, Courtney, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I'm always on the show.